Welcome to the Ortho Joke Podcast, a joint production of the Journal of Bone and Joint Surgery and Ortho Evidence. Join hosts Mohit Bhandari and Mark Swankowski as they discuss current topics and publications in the world of orthopedics and beyond.
Well, good morning, Mo.
Good morning, and happy belated Canada Day. We just celebrated July 1st in Canada, and boy, oh boy, Mark, Canadians were all they're all fired up. I have no idea why they're all fired up, but Canadians love being Canadians now. So it was pretty special Canada Day.
Yeah, well, they're not fired up because the Stanley Cup goes another year without returning to Canada. That's for damn sure. But both know the reasons why they're all fired up. And and that's actually one of the positive byproducts, perhaps, of this chaos that's going on in the world, is that Canadian nationalism is
given a boost like this. I've never known it to be like this, but it's, you know, it's kind of nice to go around. I mean, you don't usually see Canadian flags all over the place, but we're seeing them everywhere now. So,
That's good. You definitely would see that if the Stanley Cup returned to Canada. That's for sure.
That is true. Yeah.
So as we were just discussing, you know, oftentimes we talk about a topic and we invite a guest who's an expert, you know, methodological thing, clinical thing. But today, the focus of this Ortho Joe is a person who is a good friend of mine, Dr. Evelina Berger from the University of Colorado, professor and chair. She is a wonderful, strong leader in orthopedic surgery that I have known since the year 2000. I met her when she was an ABC fellow at the AOA meeting. I have followed her career ever since, and she's had a couple of stops. And so what we want to talk about is your career, Dr. Berger. So you are South African, and you had some time in the military, and you went into orthopedic surgery. So what's the story? How did you end up in medicine? Tell us about your pathway in South Africa.
Well, thank you very much, Mark. Thank you very much, Mo, for having me. I'm just a regular person. I have three barking dogs in the background, and I do orthopedics, you know. So I was born to a regular working class family, and ever since I was a child, wanted to be a doctor. Today, I think I would be put in an asylum because I did surgery on my dolls. And so I actually cut them and got several hidings for it because I would cut the limb and then put sutures in it, you know. So today my mom regrets not keeping one of those dolls, but I got my behind heated up for that. So long story forward, my dad inherited a typical South African farm. And when he realized that I wanted to go to medical school, and we had a quota system, only 20 girls per year were allowed to go to school, to medical school. He sold the family ranch to get the finances to send me and my sister. We both went to medical school. So that has always made a huge impact as to the sacrifices that our parents do to give us an opportunity that they never had. Fast through medical school, we were involved in South Africa in terrible wars, both in Angola and protecting our borders, right or wrong. And at that time, I couldn't get an intern job. It was also before the release of Mandela in a proper hospital. So there were lots of riots, lots of good experience for a young doctor. Ended up in a military hospital in Pretoria, and nobody wanted to work in orthopedics because they were working so hard. You know, it was the start of the millennials. You know, we don't want to do ortho. And I so desperately wanted the job. I go like, well, I'll take this. So long and short, I did orthopedics in the military, got heavily involved in war injuries, landmines, and it turned my head. I realized that I needed to know how to do this properly. So again, another uphill, you know, no women allowed in orthopedics. So I was working as a military officer in orthopedics. And today I believe I did some awesome work. Those days I thought this is just what you do. Saved a high-ranking officer's life one night. And the next thing is the chair of orthopedics phoned me and said, we heard that you're doing some good work in the military. We will give you a probationary appointment. So probationary appointment, here I come. I did finish my training. Had to do a year extra because I dared to get married and have a baby and was asked to leave the program. Those were the standards then. And so after I came back from maternity leave, they made me repeat a year. I took 6 weeks of maternity leave. So needless to say, I had like 8 years of experience in orthopedics by the time I graduated. And 6 weeks after I graduated, the 20th of September, 1993, I get an office. So I'm the first female to have an office in orthopedics. And it's a old building. So I decide I need to spruce it up. So I put a chair on a table and then go on the table, on the chair, onto the windowsill, which was 22 feet high, and hung onto the burglar bar so I could hang some drapes. They were rusty and I didn't know. They pulled out of the wall and I fell that 22 feet, hit my neck on the side of my desk and was had a cardiac arrest. I woke up as a hemiplegic and tough recovery, made a covenant with God and said, if you make me walk, I will dedicate my life to spine surgery. So here I am, 2025. I'm walking, I recovered. And I turned my head from wanting to be a hand surgeon because I did a lot of landmine injuries in hands to absolutely dedicating my life to spine. And I can tell you, having been paralyzed once in your life gives you a different level of empathy when you work with spine patients, especially spinal cord injury. So here I am. I absolutely dedicated myself. I was an ABC fellow, recruited to LSU by Dr. D'Ambrosia. And if you know him, he's a force to be reckoned with. He doesn't take no for an answer. Immigrated to LSU 3 weeks after 9/11, stayed through Katrina, got a sheriff badge during Katrina because it was martial law. And then was recruited up to Colorado, where I started in June of 2006 and became the chair 8 years, 7 years ago in November 2018. So that's my short life story.
Well, that's a very well-constructed abstract. Thank you for that, Evelina. So I think our listeners are going to be interested, is orthopedic training for women in South Africa in the same a disaster state, or has it improved?
No, it has improved tremendously. And our next president of South African Orthopedic Association will be a female. So it was just the time that I grew up in, a very interesting society. Women were rather seen barefoot pregnant in the kitchen. And when I got my MD degree, I was one of a few select people in the country. It started to change in my generation, but it was still, people were known by name if you were a female MD, let alone an orthopedic surgeon. So I was the third one to train, but the first one to train at the University of Pretoria.
I wonder, Evelina, I mean, first of all, thank you so much for sharing this. And you have so many things we can talk about, but I wonder in total how the totality of your prior life experiences has shaped the way you lead now. Is there anything or things that you take away that you maybe highlighted to say, this is because of this, this is how I treat others, and this is how I want to lead a department, for example?
I think the main signature of my leadership is fairness, but within fairness comes grit, okay? I will treat you extremely fair, and I will give you all the opportunity that I was denied, knowing how hard it is, okay? But for that, I expect you to have grit and persevere and do the best you can and not be just middle of the road. So I think that is sort of how this is the speech I give to the residents. And today I'm talking to the intern class for the first time. That's exactly what I'm going to tell you. I'm fair. You can come to my office and I have seen life, been through life, understand family loss, understand personal loss, and I will be accommodating, but it is a two-way street. I expect you to perform.
So on the flip to that, what are, I guess, in your mind, and, you know, I know these questions can sometimes be a little bit, you know, hard to answer because I'm saying, what is the biggest challenge you see going forward, you know, in training? What do you see with the approach you use, the big challenges for many interns coming in, or just in general residency training right now?
You know, I have a philosophical view on medical school at the moment. I think that for people to get into medical school, they already have to have sacrificed almost their whole life. They don't have a young life as a teenager. They don't have a good college life. They are just focused on excelling and being in that the 99th percentile. And I think that leads to the fact that when they make it into orthopedics, they have this thing that I've arrived, not realizing they haven't arrived. They're now only starting on their journey. And they're fatigued. They're academically, emotionally fatigued for all the hoops that they have to jump through. I see the pressure on kids in high school and in college, and they're absolutely fatigued by the time they make it into orthopedics.
You're a very thoughtful person. I know you well enough. What is your solution? Do you incorporate more social activities in your residency, or do you provide them with counseling? How do you address this very critical thing that you've just outlined?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. It's an oxymoron. You have a wellness committee, and what they do is they make you do more, okay? So it is, I don't have the perfect answer. I do read about it a lot. But I think the thing that we can excel in, and that is in support. So I engaged with a consulting company 3 years ago as an experiment. They did a complete analysis called the Hogan Color Wheel on the department and individuals. I did it with a philanthropic grant, and then started coaching sessions in my leadership, and every year putting 4 people through coaching. And I think the best you can do is for people to understand themselves, to understand what got them to this point. We all have blind spots, but if you know your vulnerabilities, then you can use your strengths to overcome that, okay? If you understand that you're an introvert, that doesn't mean that you're not social. Introverts just recharge by getting private time. I'm not an introvert. I'm an extrovert. I recharge amongst people, okay? But it doesn't mean that everybody can be like that. And I think knowing what is your feed for your soul is critically important to guide you through your career, guide you through your marriage, because that's one thing that people fail at and they never go to class for it, you know, picking a spouse and staying married. These are all the stressors of life. So I think just getting that support to people that have already shown that they can achieve is really important. And so far it's worked out well. I've not lost faculty. That is a very important thing. People like to stay. We have a good culture, and picking up people when they are having a hard time and supporting them, creating that circle of trust, knowing there's a lot of us in coaching, and that you have this psychological safety in the department when you're going through bad times to talk to each other. I think that is the key.
But it sounds like you've extended that down into the residents, though, as well, that you personally spend time with the residents and hang out with them and help
them.
Yeah,
we have a very strict mentor-mentee policy. And so if you see a resident struggling, instead of approaching the person in the hallway and go like, hey, you got to shape up. You know, that was the old orthopedic way. Okay. You actually contact their mentor and say, I've worked with Dr. So-and-so today, and I noticed that he or she did not really prepare for the case or wasn't concentrating. You know what's going on. So approaching it in a different way than putting more stress on the resident, because when you approach them, they immediately know that they are not performing well, okay? But you're in a position of power, so they're not going to tell you, well, you know, my mom just passed away. And it's interesting how they internalize things that they should reach out for support. So that mentor-mentee system is fantastic. And the mentors are all faculty and they're going through the coaching. So it is a work in progress.
You know, I'm reminded by just everything you've said. And it goes back to what I think is happening universally, Evelina, which is I think there's so many trainees trying to get into med school from med school to residency that are following almost a checklist approach and jumping through hoops. And reminds me of a quote by the late Charlie Munger, who said, if you show me the incentive, I will show you the outcome. And when you look at residency training getting in, the incentives are actually driving, you know, like they're incentivized to do what they do. Do you think orthopedic surgery is incentivizing residents to take some of the time that you're talking to understand who they are rather than write more papers, you know, do your 100 hours? I don't know, it depends on where you are, but, you know, the hours of call and all the things that we do that in many ways, historically, we went through this. Are we incentivizing, or are universities incentivizing using the right particular incentives for the outcomes that we ultimately need?
I am very blessed at the CU Anschutz campus. We've got a dean for wellness and engagement. I have got a vice chair for wellness and engagement. And what I've done is to appoint a new residency director who is young, who was one of my residents. And I think this type of behavior gets attention in the medical school, for which we are blessed. You get credit for supporting your faculty. And so it's a trickle-down effect, okay? We had to do something. If you look at the suicide rate under orthopedic surgeons, we have to do something, okay? And if you talk to somebody, everybody knows it, somebody who's a colleague who's going through a really hard time, or somebody that had suicidal ideas. We are attracting the smartest of the smartest of all people in orthopedics. It's so competitive, okay? But with that smartness comes a huge burden, because when people are that smart, they are also AAA perfectionists. And so they criticize themselves a lot. And we have never been vulnerable enough as orthopedic surgeons to accept the help. And it comes from the top down. So I tell everybody, I got a coach, okay? And it's sort of like, what? She's got a coach? I go like, yeah, I need a life coach. If you play on any NBA team, you've got a coach. You can't be the best team player, the best sportsman without a coach. Look at the tennis. Everybody's got a psychologist helping them to get through the match, okay? You need a coach. You need a life coach.
Well, so much that you've shared with us that is really deep food for thought. I'll conclude with one last one. You're a very busy person with lots of responsibilities, both locally and nationally and everywhere. And I also know you have outside interests. I know you're a top-notch shot and that you enjoy hunting and outdoors activities. What would your advice be to people in leadership positions about work-life balance?
I, again, want to challenge you, Mark. I don't think it's work-life balance. Mm. It is life balance. Mm. Because work is part of life, okay? I would say the exclamation mark is on life. Mm. I tell people to develop hobbies when they are young. And I've actually learned this by watching my son. I grew up, you know, very strict, like you, very routine. And on a Saturday, you clean your house and you're doing your laundry and all of this. And then I had this son, and I would get into his room and I had to push the door. And I go like, oh, my Lord, because you couldn't move. Okay. And he would be on the ski slopes. And then one day I looked at this and I took a step back and I realized, but maybe he's having a better life than I've had when I was his age, because I didn't do all those things. I was studying and doing chores and all kinds of stuff, thinking that one day I would do it. And all of a sudden, I woke up and one day was there, and I never learned the skills, how to ski and do all these fun things. So I think understanding balance in your life, okay, that means how to prioritize. Somebody comes to me and go like, I'm too busy. I need to say no to things. And my mentor comment was, it's not saying no, it's saying yes when. Because if you say no, you feel guilty. If you say yes, it's fine to say yes, but you need to prioritize to say, yes, I can do it after 3 months, and make sure that you stick to your deadlines. And within that, you incorporate the week hunting. That is on your schedule. Okay. My schedule says 1 week of fishing in Alaska, 1 week of hunting. It's in my schedule. And my assistant then looks at it and says, I'm sorry, Dr. Berger is not available for that surgery. Mm. And I think we are trying to hide the fact that we are normal humans, that we have hobbies, that we have obligations to families and weddings, because we never put it on our calendar. It always just said out. And I think the more open we are, the more people understand, and you lead by example, that it's life balance and you need time to recharge.
Outstanding advice. And it says on my calendar next Tuesday, driving up to Canada, because we're showing our 1940 Chris Craft on Lake Muskoka and the biggest wooden boat show in Canada. And I hope, Mo, that you can stop by if you're in town.
I will. Yes, I'm going to be kayaking myself, Evelina, on July 4th. I've got a sunrise kayak plan. So I think we're all thinking the same thing. And on a personal note, everything you've said has just been absolutely wonderful and resonates. I think it's resonated with us, and I suspect it resonates with many more who are listening in. So thank you for everything.
Oh, you're welcome. And Mark, I want to see some pictures, okay? I want to see that. I love
absolutely. We'll see each other very soon, and we'll share the pictures.
Thank you very much for the honor to be here. Enjoy it.
We very much appreciate your time, and say hello to Chris.
Please. I will. Okay. Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.